Vanchakaputurubhyascha kripasindhubhayavacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Who is Paranjan? He is the representative, or he is the one that we are actually identifying with. He is us, the living entity, who is about to grab material intelligence and enter into a body. So with the combination of the living entity, the soul, and the material intelligence, what's the role of the material intelligence? Yeah, not for Paranjan. That's for the spiritualist. The intelligence's job is to control the mind, and the mind's job is to direct the senses. So what's the job of a materialist? What is the job of the intelligence for a materialist?
To discern
how to get sense. Yeah, and to plan and scheme all day long, and all night long too. All the time, just making plans, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. For enjoyment, and the mind grabs onto those ideas and engages the senses. So together it's quite a unit. The soul identifies with the body, the whole family of the body, so to speak. And the material, the soul is the male in this, he's Paranjan himself, and the material intelligence is his wife. So he's met his material intelligence, or his wife, and he's wooed her and said, please come. And now in text 37, we're hearing some of the reply. She's already described who, about the serpent and the servants and all the desires that accompany the senses, in other words. So that's the allegory is being developed. So she says in text 37, Imam Tvam Abhitishtasva Purim Nava Mukim Vibho Mayo Panitam Gwinana Kamabogan Satam Sama. My dear Lord, I have just arranged this city of nine gates for you so that you can have all kinds of sense enjoyment. Of course, what's the city of the nine gates represent? The body. And the gates are, it will be explained a little bit later, all the different halls of the body. The halls are like gates to the outside world. So I've arranged this city of nine gates for you so that you can have all kinds of sense gratification. This is what the material intelligence did with its planning and scheming. This is what it's trying to arrange. And arrange is, practically speaking, in this way, a body so that we can enjoy. So she continues, you may live here for 100 years. She doesn't say what happens after that. And everything for your sense gratification will be supplied. How can I expect to unite with others? So she's accepting his proposal. Who are neither conversant about sex nor capable of knowing how to enjoy life while living it, while living or after death. Such foolish persons are like animals because they do not know the process of sense enjoyment in this life and after death. So human life can be used in many ways, obviously. So she's proposing a sophisticated type of sense enjoyment. Human life ultimately is meant for spiritual achievement. But most people do not think in that way, but rather they use their lives, they look at what the animals are doing, and think that we can enjoy in so much more a sophisticated way. The animal sleeps in a burrow or in his nest. And we, so sophisticated, we can have our houses with the windows facing. Which way is the proper direction for the windows to face in the southern hemisphere? Huh? Good guess. Wrong, but good guess. Now there's only three more choices. North. Then the way the most light comes in. Something like that. So we can figure out how to, in a very sophisticated way, this is human life, and this is called pravritti marg. There's a proper way to enjoy, not just an animalistic way. But yet, the quality, the actual thing that's being done, is no different from the animals. But she's saying, you are sophisticated, and we'll be able to enjoy together. The woman continued, in this material world, a householder's life brings all kind of happiness in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and the begetting of children, sons, and grandsons. People generally think this is the purpose of life. After that, one may desire liberation as well as material reputation. The householder can appreciate the results of sacrifices which enable him to gain promotion to superior planetary systems. All this material happiness is practically unknown to the transcendentalists. They cannot even imagine such happiness. So this again is the path of pravritti marg, or the way of sophisticated scriptural sense enjoyment. And the idea is to create as much piety as possible, to enjoy through pious activities, through sacrifices, in an incredible way, not in a low class, just simply sensual way like an animal. This is religious shastric enjoyment. Because this type of enjoyment not only enjoys in this life, grants us enjoyment in this life in a very subtle way, but it also allows us to enjoy in future lives. So it's intelligent in that way. It does not disregard the future. She's saying that spiritualists, they don't really enjoy. They give up material enjoyment, but they don't actually spiritually enjoy. They suffer by performance of austerities. And very often, to prove this, that they don't really enjoy, they end up being cheaters or pretenders. So she's saying, really, we should enjoy in a proper way. Do it the proper way. And of course, Prabhupada explains in the purport, he doesn't go into it very much. He doesn't defend the spiritual life, but he laments right at the end. He says, in this age of Kali especially, no one is interested in spiritual advancement. Very, very, very few people. What is the main motivation, the motivating force that inspires someone to be interested in spiritual life?
Distress.
Were you going to say something different? No. What's the verse in the Bhagavad Gita that describes this in the 7th chapter? Anyone know? Chatur vilam. Chatur vida. No. Bhajante mam jnana sukritino arjuna arto gigyasarata ti jnani cha bharatasava. Chatur vidha bhajante mam. Four kinds of sukritina, pious persons, come to me. Arto gigyasarata ti. The one who is distressed. This is the prime reason why people come to spiritual life. We try to enjoy and enjoy and enjoy, and we, instead of getting kicks, we get kicked. And therefore we look for some relief from that and take shelter of spiritual and pray for the removal of distress. So Prabhupada says, in the age of Kali especially, no one is interested in spiritual life, especially for spiritual life's own sake. But people are in distress. That we get in Kali Yuga. There is an abundance of distress. So people can take the spiritual life because of that. And even though it is sometimes found that one may be interested in spiritual advancement, he is most likely to accept the bogus method of spiritual life, being misguided by so many pretenders. So it is very difficult. Prabhupada once described how this was the most difficult thing in Kali Yuga, the preaching, is that there are so many claims and so many cheating people and so many incarnations of God, so many different types of paths, so many different seminars, so many different this, so many different ways to balance, open, clean your chakras. And people mostly get confused, even if they're sincere. So the woman continued. So anyway, she's saying, forget the transcendentalists. And later on, after becoming satisfied materially, and this is the argument, and this argument is quite popular in ISKCON nowadays, if we try to take up Nivritti Marg prematurely, if we try to become renounced prematurely, what's going to happen? Later on, we'll just end up going back into material enjoyment. So let us do it properly, she's saying. Let us really enjoy now, and then later on we can take to the practices of liberation. The woman continued, according to authorities, the household of life is pleasing not only to oneself, but to all the forefathers, demigods, great sages, saintly persons, and everyone else. A household of life is thus beneficial. So she's saying, yes, 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 let us enjoy. So Prabhupada explains in his purport the truth of this, that as soon as someone takes his birth, even though no one likes to admit it, they have so many debts and so many obligations to others. As soon as we take birth, who are the obligations to? The family. Nowadays, no one feels obliged to the family, but actually we have a debt to the family. And to the country. Nowadays, people tend not to feel obliged to their country, but actually there is a debt, a responsibility to the country and to the sages, the wise people that have gone before us and left us knowledge. There are so many debts, and if we don't pay these debts, we end up having to pay them back at a later time if we act in an ungrateful way. So Prabhupada explains in his purport about halfway down. If he does not repay them, he is further entangled in the process of birth and death. The Grihamidi, however, who is overly addicted to material things, does not know that if he simply takes shelter at the lotus feet of Mukunda, he is immediately freed from all obligations to others. So there are two ways to be free from all these debts. One is to surrender to Krishna, take shelter of Mukunda. Mukunda means, is the name of Krishna, that means the giver of liberation. And also it means he whose face is blossoming like a kunda flower. His mukunda, his face is like a kunda flower that's very, very beautiful and blossoming. So he who takes shelter of Mukunda, of Krishna, he is no longer a debtor, because he is so watering like the root of the tree of his life. He's giving back his primal debt to God, to Krishna, and therefore he owes no one anything else. But most people neither take shelter of Krishna, nor nowadays in Kali Yuga, people are feeling less inclined to feel obliged to anyone. Because why? It gets in the way of what? Their plans for enjoyment. Unfortunately, Grihamedi does not have any interest in Krishna consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj says, Matirna Krishna Palataksvatova Mito Bipadyeta Grihavratanam. A Grihavrata is the same as a Grihamedi. Grihamedi. One who takes sex life to be the supreme finds action in Krishna consciousness confusing, either due to his own personal considerations or due to his having taken instructions from others or conferring with them. He becomes addicted to sexual indulgence and cannot act in Krishna consciousness. She continues, "Oh, my dear hero, who in this world would not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten." So, I'm not sure exactly what Prabhupada meant when he said that, but easily wrapped around her. He's praptam. Easily gotten means easily. Yeah, easily obtained. Because it's just happened by God's grace. He's come, but easily fooled and easily wrapped around her little finger. It sounds like if she's using flattery like that. Now, there's something quite interesting and very controversial in this purport, and I'll read that in a moment. Let me just continue. So, and it's text 41. We'll go back to that in a moment. Almighty arm, who in this world will not be attracted to your arms, which are just like the bodies of serpents? Actually, you relieve the distress of husbandless women like us by your attractive smile and your aggressive mercy. We think that you are traveling on the surface of the earth just to benefit us only. So she's expressing her attraction to Paranjana. Because without the consciousness that the soul provides within the body, there can be no enjoyment. So it is quite a match. And then that's really what goes on. Practically, she's acting as his false ego. Practically speaking, she's saying, "You're wonderful, you're wonderful, you're wonderful." Because without that concept of being wonderful, and a materialistic person cannot enjoy. Doesn't have the self-confidence to go out and enjoy himself. So that's one of the functions of the material intelligence, to flatter us. And that way, in that way, entangle us more in material life. The great sage Narada continued, "My dear king, those two, the man and the woman, supporting one another through mutual understanding, entered that city and enjoyed life for 100 years. So their attitude supported or entangled each other in material life. And that's usually what happens. This Paranjana, again, is not the spiritualist. He's not representing the spiritualist. But this is giving us a hint of what material life is like. And so far, how does it sound? Yeah, quite great, huh? Well, wait till the second half. Now, we're going back first to 41, the purport. So, right, the last paragraph, Prabhupada talks about how the husband gives children to the wife like that. And in this way, and his duty is to take care of the wife, and in this way the woman is the center of all material enjoyment. And then Prabhupada says, in this regard, the word vikyatam is very significant. A man is always famous for his aggression towards a beautiful woman. And such aggression is sometimes considered rape. Although rape is not legally allowed, it is a fact that a woman likes a man who is very expert at rape. Now, nowadays, being a rapist is not very popular. And so many of the women, even the women in ISKCON, when they, and not only the women, but the men, they wonder, what does Prabhupada mean? Is he saying that women like to be raped? Is that what that's what he's saying? That a woman's great pleasure is walking down some street in a dark alley and a man jumps out and grabs them and takes advantage of them by physical force? No. What Prabhupada is saying is something more like expert at rape means seduction. And this is the nature. He's saying the nature of a woman is they like to be seduced by someone who is expert, aggressive in an expert way. Because the woman is prakriti, and the pleasure is The pleasure is in being enjoyed by the Purusha. So this is the something in the mentality. Anyone want to comment on that?
Is that based on psychological principles?
Just psychological principles. Have nothing to do with the psychological principle of a woman. And this is something, a traditional woman too. That's what Prabhupada is saying. Not that they actually like to be, you know, accosted, something like that. It's just a point. But you'd be very surprised to see how much controversy this purport has caused. Why does Prabhupada say these things? Is he condoning rape? Women like to be raped? That means the men should rape women?
Is it sometimes possible that Srila Prabhupada's choice of words may have to do with English being his second language?
So many times.
Maybe more sophisticated term that includes the aggression without the horror?
Horror and violence. That's what his expert is talking about. Anyway, not that we want to go into this particular topic in great detail, but because it is, because this verse has caused so much controversy, the purport.
Just on the point of using English as a second language.
Yeah.
I've made it a kind of hobby at various times to check the etymology of the words Prabhupada
uses. Yes.
And I haven't found anyone that uses the language as well as he does. He uses a word in any particular place. Well, if you look into the origin of the word,
yes,
it gives such a precise...
Right, but not by contemporary usage all the time.
Right.
With all the connotations of what the words mean at this particular time, because Prabhupada's education in the English language was very traditional. Scottish Church's College. Quite proper.
Greek and Latin origins of all of the words. I think I haven't read anyone that uses English.
There's a clue in the next purport also that says, when a husbandless woman is attacked by an aggressive man, she takes his action to be merciful. Because it describes that she's...
But he doesn't also, again, he doesn't mean attacked, literally attacked, you know, with a knife at the throat and a gun at the head.
Well, you see the setting in which they're dealing with each other. You can see the setting in which the lady is speaking to the man. It's not a vulgar setting. It's very serene and pleasurable.
Yeah. So the idea is that that we don't minimize Prabhupada's words, but they still have to be understood in a context. So people who tend to be literalists and fundamentalists will say, no, Prabhupada said that a woman likes a man who is expert at rape. So therefore, this person happens to be a woman, and therefore, Prabhupada said...
Yeah,
it's obviously
not
directly. Yes.
When you're following the psychology of what's happening and you come across that, it's quite different than if you happen to open Bhagavatam right there and read that sentence without knowing what is going on, because it's something unfolding.
Yes. Okay, just wanted to mention that. So now Narada continued explaining to who? To whom was he speaking? To Chini Barishat. He's teaching the king something. Who is a praviti margi. He wants to enjoy material life in this life and the future. So he is Paranjana. And we are also Paranjana. But he is telling, Narada is telling King Prachini Bharshad about Paranjana and establishing the relationship. So when he sees what's going to happen with Paranjana, he's going to also see his own future, and therefore he's going to understand that the road that he is taking is not a wise road to travel on. So now, these two, the man and the woman, supporting one another through mutual understanding, entered that city and enjoyed life for 100 years. Many professional singers used to sing about the glories of King Paranjana and his glorious activities. When it was too hot in the summer, he used to enter a reservoir of water. He would surround himself with many women and enjoy their company. Prabhupada's purport. A living being has different activities in different stages of life. One stage is called Jagrata, or the life of awakening. So this, when studying Indian philosophy, this point that there are three states of consciousness, Jagrata, Svapna, and Susupti, comes up many, many, many times. Susupti means deep, deep dreamless sleep. Svapna means sleep with dream. And Jagrata means awakened life. So these are considered the three states of consciousness. Another stage is called Susupti, or Svapna, or the life of a dream. And another stage is called Susupti, or life in an unconscious state. And still another stage occurs after death. In the previous verse, the life of awakening was described. That is, the man and the woman were married and enjoyed life for 100 years. In this verse, life in the dream state is described. For the activities Paranjana accomplished during the day were also reflected at night in the dream state. Paranjana used to live with his wife for sense enjoyment. And at night, this very sense enjoyment was appreciated in different ways. A man sleeps very soundly when he is greatly fatigued. And when a rich man is greatly fatigued, he goes to his garden house with many female friends and there enters the water and enjoys their company. Such is the tendency of the living entity within this material world. A living entity is never satisfied with a woman unless he is trained in the system of brahmacharya. Generally, a man's tendency is to enjoy many women. And even at the very end of life, the sex impulse is so strong that even though one is very old, he still wants to enjoy the company of young girls. Thus, because of the strong sex impulse, the living entity becomes more and more involved in this material world. 45.
Can you explain what that means about how these verses describe this another stage of life?
To do in his life, and it was reflected in the dream state. Now, why this verse specifically is the dream describing the dream state? It's not really clear. But in other words, what we do in the day will be reflected in our dream. So that's really the point. How this verse specifically is talking about a dream. His dreaming as opposed to his actual activities is not clear.
Is that because in the previous section it talks about he and one woman, and here it describes that he would surround himself with many women and enjoy their company?
So
is that something to do with the fact that that's a dream that he's having as opposed to what he's doing by day?
No, not particularly, because he's talking about a rich man. Yeah.
I just noted that point that later on in the book, Robert says that a man sleeps very soundly when he's great fatigue, so that's obviously a dream state. And then when a rich man is great fatigue, he goes.
But it doesn't sound like it's a rich man dreaming there. He's talking about a rich man in real life, in his waking state. So the distinctions there aren't clear.
Because it just says that the life of awakening is that the man and the enjoyed life for 100 years. That's the life of awakening.
Right, but it, when he enjoyed life, it doesn't contradict that, that he did these other things too. After all, he was a king. So, in any case, our life, how we live, or what we're meditating upon as we're in our life, will, in our waking state, will affect what happens when we close our eyes and go to sleep as well. And that will also, both of them will affect our next life, practically speaking. So of the 9 gates in that city, 7 were on the surface and 2 were subterranean. A total of 9 doors were constructed, and these led to different places. All the gates were used by the city's governor. My dear king, of the 9 doors, 5 led towards the eastern side, 1 led toward the northern side, 1 led to the southern side, 2 led to the western side. I shall try to give the names of these different doors. So in the next verses up to text 54, it mentions all the gates of the body and tells their names, and each of the names have a relationship to the particular function of the eyes or the ears, etc. And again, the gates, because we couldn't even imagine what it would be like if we had no eyes and no ears and nostrils and mouth, etc., or hands and legs, if we were like pumpkins or something like that, and there's no real way of dealing with the outside world. So this is the purpose of these gates. Interacting with the sense objects of the outside world. And in one of Prabhupada's purports, when he's describing the ears, he mentions that out of the 2 ears, which one is stronger? Anyone know? Huh? No? Try again. The right ear is considered stronger, and the right ear is meant to hear material things, and the left ear is meant to hear spiritual things. This means the tendency, the materialistic tendency, is stronger in people generally than the spiritual tendency. And when we hear mantras from the spiritual master, we hear it in the left ear, because that is the ear that is meant for spiritual hearing, traditionally. So there's, up to text 54, there's a description of these different appendages and gates. Of the text 54, of the many inhabitants of this city, there are 2 persons named Nirvak and Peshakrit. Although King Pranjan was the ruler of citizens who possessed eyes, he unfortunately used to associate with these blind men. Accompanied by them, he used to go here and there and perform various activities. So what are these blind men? They are considered the arms and the legs. And these are not quite gates. And they don't have holes, and they don't directly connect us to the body. What? Oh, you just... I thought so you were doing something that wanted to say something. And although we depend on them, we depend on our arms and legs, but still they are blind and need direction. And where should the direction come from? Obviously from the intelligence. And the intelligence should be serving the soul, the actual true nature of the soul, as not in the case as what's going on with Paranjana. Text 55. Sometimes he used to go to his private home with one of his chief servants. Chief servant is the mind, who is named Vishuchina. At that time, illusion, satisfaction, and happiness used to be produced from his wife and children. So, that's some interesting points, and we'll read 2 out of the 3 paragraphs. According to the Vedic conclusion, oneself is situated within the heart. This is the private home. As stated in the Vedic language, Vidyam Atma, Vidyayam Atma Pratishtitaha. The self is situated within the heart. In the material condition, however, the spirit soul is covered by the material qualities, namely goodness, passion, and darkness. And within the heart, these three qualities react. For instance, when one is in goodness, he feels happiness. When one is in passion, he feels satisfaction through material enjoyment. And when one is in darkness, he feels bewilderment. So we can see what we can judge ourselves and see which of the modes of material nature affect us. Are we generally happy and light and satisfied, feeling self-satisfied? Or are we full of seeking our satisfaction by fulfilling desires, or bewildered? These are the effects of the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, ignorance.
One person's satisfaction, couldn't that be another person's bewilderment? I can feel quite satisfied in my bewilderment for someone else.
You can be,
that would be very ignorant then. For me, I have to be very satisfied.
Yeah, that's ignorance. To be satisfied in bewilderment is ignorance. The result of, and that could, because if you're satisfied with bewilderment, what would be the result of that? Say if a person is satisfied going to the pub and drinking, and it's a horrible place, so tamaguni. But if he's satisfied in that, he's going to do it. And the result of that is further bewilderment, further ignorance. Yeah? That's ignorance. And there's other people who are satisfied running all around all day and you know, striving and pushing, and that's passion. That's their satisfaction. But if a person is self-satisfied, that's what is meant by the mode of goodness. He's not motivated to go to do very much even, but he's not ignorant. But he feels pleasure within naturally, and he has knowledge. That's the satisfaction born of goodness. So in Kali Yuga, everyone is so afflicted with passion and ignorance. And to make it more confusing, the different modes are always moving. It's always shifting. So as soon as you get used to something, it moves again. Sometimes during the day you might feel quite satisfied and peaceful and happy, and then it shifts. So that means the mode of goodness has attained some prominence. Then another time you may feel so angry at everyone. Ignorance is prominent. Another time you may just feel like running and pushing, and you can't sit down, practically speaking. So that's the mode of passion. Have to do this, have to do that, have to do that. Run. So these are the modes of material nature. All these activities are all in the mind, and they function on the platform of thinking, feeling, and willing. And then skipping one paragraph and going to the next one. Everyone who is not in Krishna consciousness must be considered to be an illusion. One's so-called feelings of happiness and satisfaction resulting from material things are also illusions. Factually, neither society, friendship, love, nor anything else can save one from the onslaught of the external energy, which is symptomized by birth, death, old age, and disease. To get even one living entity out of the illusory condition is very difficult. Therefore, Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivyesha Gunamayi, Mama Maya Duratyaya, Mareviye Prapadyante, Mayame Tantarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Therefore, unless one surrenders completely to the lotus feet of Krishna, he cannot get out of the entanglement of the three modes of material nature. So they're like whips. All of them are like whips. Or like ropes. Guna means rope. means qualities and ropes, and they bind the living entity. So they work together, but yet the mode of goodness brings knowledge and is illuminating, so it is considered superior. It is the doorway to liberation, so it is considered superior to the other two modes. 56. Being thus entangled in different types of mental concoction and engaged in fruitive activities, King Paranjana came completely under the control of material intelligence and was thus cheated. Indeed, he used to fulfill all the desires of his wife, the queen. Purport. When a living entity is in such bewilderment that he is under the control of his wife or material intelligence, he has to satisfy the intelligence of his so-called wife and act exactly according to her dictates. Various shastras advise that for material convenience, one should keep his wife always satisfied by giving her ornaments and by following her instructions. In this way, there will be no trouble in family life. Therefore, for one's own social benefit, one is advised to keep his wife satisfied. In this way, it's funny because usually all married people know all these secrets and tricks, but no one but Prabhupada puts them in writing. Therefore, for one's social benefit, one is advised to keep his wife satisfied. In this way, when one becomes the servant of his wife, he must act according to the desires of his wife. Thus, one becomes more and more entangled. In Bengal, it is said that if one becomes an obedient servant of his wife, he loses all reputation. However, the difficulty is that unless one becomes the most obedient servant of his wife, family life becomes disturbed. In the Western countries, this disturbance gives rise to the divorce law. And in the Eastern countries, like India, there is separation. Now this disturbance is confirmed by the new introduction of the divorce law in India. Within the heart, the mind is acting, thinking, feeling, and willing, and falling under the control of one's wife is the same as falling under the control of material intelligence. Thus one begets children by his wife and becomes entangled in so many activities under the control of mental concoction. So clearly, what Prabhupada is speaking of here is for the materialists, this is how it works. In Sanskrit, in Bengali, even the word for wife is stri, which means one who increases one's entanglement in the material world. And it works both ways, for the husband to the wife and the wife to the husband. But immediately one's needs increase. One gets married, a man gets married, then there are more mouths to feed the children, then you need an income source, security, etc., like that. So in this way, one becomes entangled in material life very, very, very deeply. So in a devotee marriage, it should be different. The husband and wife should help each other make advancement in spiritual life, and not have an acknowledged purpose of doing that, and not to entangle each other in material life. Not easy, but this is what it is supposed to be. Now this is how entangled our Paranjana was. And obedient he was. When the queen drank liquor, guess what King Paranjana did? He also engaged in drinking. When the queen dined, he used to dine with her. And when she chewed, King Paranjana used to chew along with her. When the queen sang, he also sang. So of course what this means is that the soul is always following when it wants to enjoy. It follows unhesitatingly everything that the material intelligence does and wants. So when the queen sang, he also sang. Similarly, when the queen cried, he also cried. When the queen laughed, he also laughed. When the queen talked loosely, he also talked loosely. And when the queen walked, the king walked behind her. When the queen would stand still, the king would also stand still. And when the queen would lie down in bed, he would also follow and lie down with her. When the queen sat, he would also sit. And when the queen heard something, he would follow her to hear the same thing. When the queen saw something, the king would also look at it. And when the queen smelled something, the king would follow her to smell the same thing. When the queen touched something, the king would also touch it. And when the dear queen was lamenting, the poor king also had to follow her in lamentation. In the same way, when the queen felt enjoyment, he also felt enjoyed. And when the queen was satisfied, the king also felt satisfaction. Quite interesting. In Kali Yuga, no one could cooperate that much. Purport. The mind is the place where the self is situated, and the mind is controlled by the intelligence. The living entity situated within the heart follows the intelligence. The intelligence is here and depicted as the queen, and the soul under mental control follows the material intelligence just as the king follows his wife. The conclusion is that material intelligence is the cause of bondage for the living entity. The point is that one has to take to spiritual intelligence to come out of this entanglement. In the life of Maharaj Ambarish, now we're going to hear how to use our material intelligence following the example of Maharaj Ambarish, our spiritual intelligence, or rather use our intelligence spiritually. And Maharaj Ambarish is the sparkling example of this. In the life of Maharaj Ambarish, what canto of the Bhagavatam will we hear about Maharaj Ambarish? Anyone know?
Nine.
So first of all, we find that the great Maharaj first engaged his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. So that's the first business. In this way, his intelligence became purified. Maharaj Ambarish also used to use his other senses in the service of the Lord. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity in the temple, nicely decorated with flowers. He engaged his sense of smelling by smelling the flowers, and he engaged his legs by walking to the temple. And his ears were engaged in hearing about Krishna. His tongue was engaged in two ways, in speaking about Krishna and in tasting prasad offered to the deity. Materialistic persons who are under the full control of material intelligence cannot perform all of these activities. Thus, consciously or unconsciously, they become entangled by the dictations of material intelligence. This fact is summarized in the following verse. And this is the last verse of the chapter. In this way, King Paranjana was captivated by his nice wife and was thus cheated. Why is he cheated? Why is that considered being cheated? Why is that considered being cheated in the allegory?
Because he only ever does what she wants. He never does anything for himself.
And what is he? And what is the thing that the soul wants to do naturally? It's to love Krishna. So he's cheated because his real nature is being completely covered and destroyed practically through this ignorance. Indeed, he became cheated in his whole existence in the material world. Even against that poor foolish king's desire, he remained under the control of his wife, just like a pet animal that dances according to the order of its master. Have you ever seen a dancing bear? Yeah? Where did you see a dancing bear?
That's from the India, we were traveling in the taxi from 11 and the taxi broke down.
Yeah? And a dancing bear came and ate you?
Yes, but he had a dance.
He had a dance. Yeah.
In the middle of the road.
Big, powerful bear dancing. Yeah. Just doing whatever.
Made a mistake.
in his dancing?
Down, looked at him, and his owner
wanted some money.
So he brought him right over to the door of the taxi and made him dance, and then he didn't see
anything. Yes, dancing bears. Do they do that? The bears do that too. That they don't do in India. Yeah? Bicycles and everything. They can't drive Maruti van now. The word vipralabha is very significant in this verse. V means specifically, and pralabdha means obtained. Just to satisfy his desires, the king got the queen, and thus he became cheated by material existence. This is something that is very hard for us to understand and deeply accept. That material existence, rather than giving us pleasure, it actually cheats us fully. Just as a pet monkey dances according to the desires of its master, the king danced according to the desires of the queen. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Mahat Sevam Dwara Ho Vamukte. If one associates with a saintly person, a devotee, one's path of liberation becomes clear. But if one associates with a woman or with a person who's too much addicted to a woman, his path of bondage becomes completely clear. So this works also. Women associating with men and men associating with women, because the point is material enjoyment, facility for material enjoyment. When we build our material plans, how are we going to enjoy, and we get cheated in this way. The spirit soul gets cheated. On the whole, for spiritual advancement, one must give up the company of women. I don't know what women are supposed to do.
Give up the company of men.
Oh, okay. Walk home. This is what is meant by taking the order of sannyas. What are women going to do about that one?
Get driven home.
Okay.
Get driven home by each other.
Okay. No, we're up to sannyas. We've already passed driving home. Should become renounced. The renounced order. Before taking sannyas, or completely renouncing the material world, one has to practice avoiding illicit sex. Sex life, licit or illicit, is practically the same. But through illicit sex, one becomes more and more captivated. By regulating one's sex life, there is a chance that one may eventually be able to renounce sex or renounce the association of women. If this can be done, advancement in spiritual life comes very easily. How one becomes captivated by the association of one's dear wife is explained in this chapter by Narada Muni. Attraction for one's wife means attraction for the material qualities. One who is attracted by the material quality of darkness is in the lowest stage of life, whereas one who is attracted by the material quality of goodness is in a better position. Sometimes we see that when a person is on the platform of material goodness, he is attracted more or less by the cultivation of knowledge. This is, of course, a better position, for knowledge gives one the preference to accept devotional service. Unless one comes to the platform of knowledge, the Brahma-Bhuta stage, one cannot advance in devotional service. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma-Bhuta prasanatmana sochati nakankshati samasaveshu bhuteshu mabhaktim labhate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. The platform of knowledge is advantageous because it is a means by which one may come to the stage of devotional service. However, if one takes the devotional service directly, knowledge is revealed without separate endeavor. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Jnanayati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayada Haitukam. Devotional service automatically reveals actual knowledge of our material existence. One who is sufficiently intelligent immediately attains the stage of renunciation of so-called society, family, and love, as well as other things. In other words, one who is intelligent, he takes the devotional service very, very seriously and really minimizes his entanglement in the material world. As long as we are attached to society, family, and love of the material world, there is no question of knowledge, because knowledge means to know that we're souls, we're eternal. So what the soul has to do with the material world or his specific family or society, it's just temporary. It's a temporary identification based on a temporary existence within a particular specific body. Nor is there a question of devotional service. By directly taking to devotional service, however, one becomes filled with knowledge and renunciation. In this way, one's life becomes successful. So the plot will thicken. Thicken. 26. Tomorrow we will begin. King Paranjana goes to the forest to hunt, and his queen becomes angry. Okay, we're past 8, so we'll stop here and tomorrow. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Narada Muni ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.